Hi, I'm John Ostrower, editor-in-chief of The Air Current.
I'm Brian Summers, and I write The Airline Observer. You're listening to The Air Show, the podcast where we talk about what goes on in the business of the sky. Well, John, it's just you and me today, and we're going to be talking about airlines in India, specifically Air India and IndiGo. For as long as I've been covering airlines, Indian carriers have been an afterthought. But times have changed. India is the world's largest country by population, and actually, finally, its airlines are catching up. So I did a conference at the end of February in Singapore, and I had a chance to talk to IndiGo CEO Peter Elbers, who came from KLM, and Campbell Wilson, who came from Singapore Airlines, and they're both trying to bring some magic back to India.
This is an extremely interesting time for Indian aviation, and I think it's really important to look at all of the buying that's going on. I mean, we had IndiGo buying 500 airplanes in one go. They're already buying airplanes for the 2030s right now, and so what we really have is a shift in the balance of power within the Middle East, within China, within Asia, around the pace of growth. At this point, with China's position in the world and its economic coupling or decoupling with the US and Europe, and the state of geopolitics really puts China in a question mark category as they begin taking airplanes again from Boeing, and whether or not they'll order airplanes again from Boeing, but also the pace of buying that they're doing from Airbus. So what we have now is a massive, massive, massive backlog of orders from Indian carriers who want to grow. And the one hallmark of the Indian market, and I think, Brian, you would agree with this, it has not been a particularly stable market. It is a much more liberalized market than China, certainly, which is, again, command economy, very controlled, very, you know, you have to get regulator approval for commercial plans and aircraft delivery. In India, it is far more of a free-for-all. It's much more like the U.S. after deregulation in the early 80s, where you've got these wild swings in capacity and the government tries to step in to control things. And then invariably, you have one or two airlines that go bankrupt. And it happens over and over again. We've seen this at various points, really, for almost the last 15 or 20 years. So is this time different? Brian, what say you?
My gut is that this time is different, right? This is pretty much the largest growing economy in the world. It's the most populous country in the world. The airlines are finally acting like it. The country has had a weird relationship with aviation throughout the past two or three decades. But you know, the more I learn about IndiGo specifically, this is a 17-year-old airline. They must have told me six times that they're the fastest airline in history to carry 100 million passengers per year. Very proud of that. Great track record. They actually make a lot of money, or at least they did in their most recent quarter. They made the net profit the equivalent of, I think, U.S. more than $300 million, $360 million. Profit margin after tax of 15.4%. You know, I wrote a piece about this because I found it interesting. You know, Peter Elbers, I mentioned, he came from KLM, and people may or may not know this, but when Ben Smith came over from Air Canada and took over as the CEO of Air France KLM, he decided, you know what, we're going to centralize most of the power in Paris, and we can't have Amsterdam acting like its own fiefdom. And so he took away some of the power that Elbers had, and Elbers, not surprisingly, moved on to IndiGo. But, you know, the joke is that, like, Ben Smith has the way, way sexier job. He gets to fly all over the world in international first class, and people treat him like a god. But Elbers is making way more money. So I really like what IndiGo is doing. A lot of opportunity in that country. And of course, they've pretty much been an all Airbus narrow body operator with some ATRs as well. We've been hearing rumors for a very long time that they're going to go into wide bodies. They actually damp lease two wide bodies with this weird thing that they're doing with Turkish Airlines, where I think Turkish operates the planes, but they're painted in IndiGo. I asked Elbers if they're going to go for wide bodies, and he said they're not ruling anything out. My gut is that they're actually going to do it. What do you think, John?
So they've got A321 XLRs on order, and I think that's going to be their first foray into long haul. And I think that's a far more incremental step than it is going to wide bodies. I think you have to test the market over long distances and then figure out how you grow from there once you actually have those markets established.
John, if I can interrupt you for a second. So Indigo, they published a slide deck at their investor day last month. And the very interesting thing about the A321 XLR for them is they do the thing where they show the range circle, right? And so the XLR gets them more range. But guess what it leaves out? It leaves out Western Europe. You can't get to London. You can't get to Australia. Like some very exciting markets they can't get to. And I just wonder if they're going to say, we're a big airline, world's most populous country. Our CEO formerly ran a big global airline, and we just want to be in London.
You know, it's really interesting because I think it gets back to a lot of the challenge that airlines in Europe and the US have faced, or North America rather, around low cost long haul, right? How do you do that? How do you do that profitably? And how do you do that sustainably? And the one thing that Indigo has been phenomenally good at is adopting a model where every single airplane that they take, and this is pretty common across low cost carriers, but every single airplane that they take, they buy from Airbus. And what they do is they immediately turn around and do a sale leaseback to a lessor. So every single transaction that they have when they buy an airplane is ultimately cash positive because they will they will sell it back to a lessor for more than they paid Airbus. So they get additional cash on top of what they already had as an outflow to buy the airplane. And that has actually fueled their growth. So every single time they take an airplane, they have a cash positive event. And we've seen this model replicated around various places. Porter does it. And it's given them a lot of runway to grow and grow sustainably from a cash flow perspective. I mean, it's fundamentally the Southwest model, right? It's Southwest for India. And I think that has been extraordinarily successful for the type of market that it is, which I think, Peter Elbers talked about this, that it's a very price-sensitive market. I mean, you have an enormous amount of folks in the middle class who are now flying for the first time. And what are you competing? You're competing against trains, which is still the dominant form of transportation in India, where you have all of this happening simultaneously. I mean, there is, you can't talk about this without talking about kind of what also happened at Air India in terms of the Tata Group and with Singapore Airlines coming in with the Vistara combination, all of these things that are taking place over at Air India in terms of how they are posturing themselves. So when you talk about long haul and you talk about that transition for Indigo to wide bodies potentially, what we're talking about is a competition with Air India, but also competition with Emirates and Qatar. And this is one of the most fascinating parts of thinking about the Indian aviation market is that the largest international airline in India before this recent huge wave of buying was Emirates. They operated more flights to India than Indian carriers exiting the country. And that was a point of market pride for Emirates because they had Dubai as the central offshore quote unquote hub for Indian operations. You'd about 3.5-4 hours depending on where you are in the country. So what they would do is they'd run them overnight and then they'd have really high utilization and then they'd go back out during the day. So it was really a very efficient way to do it and a really huge benefit of geography. Well, Air India wants that back. Every nation fundamentally believes it is their birthright to be the largest operator of people in and out of their own market. And so that's what we see here. And we see a total the privatization of Air India as a vehicle for doing that. So we've got hundreds of airplanes coming into Air India, Air India Express, Air India, medium haul and long haul fleets. And so I guess the question then becomes, where do all these airplanes go? I mean, I'm curious if Elbers gave any indication of his level of confidence that the infrastructure within India would actually be able to keep up with the influx of airplanes.
First, John, I just want to respond to what you said about, Emirates being the national carrier of India, because this is something that I asked Wilson about, and I asked Elbers about it as well. And, you know, they give me a pretty honest answer that I buy, and it's that, you know, once Indian airlines get better and once the infrastructure is there, who is going to fly out of their way, perhaps make a connection in Dubai at 4 a.m. to get where they're going? You know, people were only forced to do that, they said, because the Indian airlines had been, you know, so bad and just not able to take care of the local customer.
I think that's a great point. But I also think that one of the key pieces here is about cost. And ultimately, is this going to be a race to the bottom on which airline Indian travelers choose to head to Europe, Australia, elsewhere in Asia, North America and beyond? And is that going to be the deciding factor? And scale and cost is going to be a huge part of that. So I think it's a really interesting question. And look, I mean, Emirates has the benefit of geography. Dubai is in a really well-situated location where you've got, you know, something like 4 billion, 5 billion people within an 8-hour flight. And you can have that benefit. And India is disadvantaged in that regard comparatively in terms of, you know, nonstop access to various places. You have shorter flights from Dubai comparatively to hit points in Africa, North America, and Europe. So I think it's going to be an interesting operational challenge, especially when you start putting, you know, this new cadre of long-haul airplanes into the Indian fleet and where they end up going.
But Sean, you know, recently I was invited to an Air India junket, right? So they reached out to me and they said, Brian, we want to fly you to Delhi. We want you to see the new Airbus 350. We're excited about this. And for people who don't know how this works, I rarely take these, but it's basically an all expenses paid trip so that airlines can show you their shiny new toy. So they're like, you can take any airplane you want, any Air India flight that you want. But, you know, we fly from San Francisco to Delhi, and that's nearby you. But we highly recommend, Brian, that you not fly that flight. It is not our best airplane. It is our worst airplane. And so, you know, they had this idea of this, like, convoluted trip that I was going to make from Los Angeles to San Francisco to Mumbai to Delhi for, like, a 2-day trip. And, you know, that's part of the reason that people are going, they're going through Dubai or they're going through Abu Dhabi. This is an airline that has such a horrific product, and they know it, that people are just going out of their way to avoid it. Yeah, if I'm going from the U.S. to Africa, I might still stay through Dubai, but there are a lot of people coming from the United States to India, and they're still avoiding the flag carrier.
Yeah, it's interesting. A note for our listeners. The first A350s that are coming into Air India's fleet are actually airplanes that were supposed to go to Aeroflot and will not go to Aeroflot because of the European sanctions after the invasion of Ukraine and the collective global response to say no more Western airplanes. So that's what is partially enabled Air India to get as many airplanes as they have as quickly as they can. And so there's all these different dynamics at play. I mean, there's also, I mean, look, I can't help but be provincial here and be like, well, why aren't there flights from Seattle to India? And I think one of the things we should keep an eye on as Alaska and Hawaiian get together is whether or not the use of a long haul airplane, whether that 787 actually ends up being for the Indian market. There's some speculation within the Seattle aviation communities of whether or not as a market that isn't served from Seattle nonstop, that actually becomes an option given the range of the 787 that Hawaiian is getting and really the size of the Indian population here, which is enormous given Microsoft and Amazon and the diaspora, that people want to go direct from Seattle. So it's going to be interesting to watch sort of how the competitive dynamics play out, specifically like what happens with that really, really long flight from San Francisco, which at one point I believe was actually the longest flight in the world based on the distance flown, because they use the globe in a really interesting way to get the most favorable winds in a totally counterintuitive direction. But it ended up flying a longer distance than you otherwise would have, but you got more favorable winds to get there. So this is a market that is having enormous amounts of change right now. And I think within that, I think what we're really getting to is whether or not the infrastructure within India can ultimately absorb these thousands of airplanes that are on order from Akasa, which is taking 737 Maxes as a low-cost carrier, and the hundreds of airplanes coming to Indigo, and the hundreds of airplanes coming into Air India, and how this evolves. And so, you know, what we have right now is an Indian market that is hugely in flux. And you've got the Airports Authority of India is actually investing $11 billion in its airport infrastructure through 2025. That's going to ultimately have them fielding and operating 220 airports by 2025. I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's interesting that you say this because I talked to Campbell Wilson, and I said, Campbell, do you consider Indigo a competitor? Are you sort of going up against Peter Elbers, right? Two expats coming in here and trying to both win share. And he said, look, the market is so big and there's so many opportunities that, yeah, we have Air India Express and we compete against Indigo. But he said, really, the mission for the CEOs of Air India and Indigo are to go to the government and say, this is what we need collectively from infrastructure. This is how it's done outside. And so that if they do compete with each other, but they do just as well persuading the government to get with modern times and to do things that are going to help both airlines.
Yeah, and the government is spending huge amounts of money to do this. I mean, we have a lot of airports, large airports coming up rapidly. You've got a new airport in Mumbai. You've got a new airport in Goa, in Jewar. I mean, you've got this just tremendous expansion going on to handle the influx. The question is, and this is actually one of the things that I think is truly important here, is can the infrastructure keep up with the influx of airplanes? And there was a really interesting report assembled by Doug Harned at Bernstein that actually looked at whether or not there was going to be a difference in how China grew versus how India wants to grow. In looking at those comparisons, they both have about 1.4 billion people, both fast-growing economies, very different economies, very different geopolitical posture globally in terms of how they want to interact with the world. But what Harned found was that China wasn't the right template for looking at how Indian growth. It was actually far closer to Indonesia and how they've grown with respect to a more decentralized economic system and also infrastructure that really has tempered how many airplanes that they can take. And there's a significant difference in his calculation about the number of airplanes he thought would actually end up being delivered because of the physical number of gates and slots and runways and all the things that you need to actually field a fleet of this size. And I'm actually going to just pause for a moment. I'm going to find that report, and I want to actually get the actual number there.
Okay.
Because it was really interesting.
Let's talk about that. But first, we need to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. John, I did it again over the weekend.
Uh-oh. What did you do?
Listeners may know I have a points buying problem, and there was a really good deal with Marriott, which I realize isn't an airline, but I bought some Marriott points, which I then transferred to Cathay Pacific. And of course, when I went to my credit card transaction bill, I saw this was fulfilled by Points, which is owned by our sponsor, PlusGrade. And I gotta tell you, it was a really easy way to buy miles. I bought them one second, and the next, they were in my account. I think I'm fast becoming PlusGrade's best customer. And it makes some sense, right? Because PlusGrade told us last week that people who are in this ecosystem, people who buy points, are much more attached to these loyalty programs. So they told us that loyalty program members who purchase points complete 31% more transactions in the airline, or perhaps this case in the hotel company as a whole. And then they purchase 26% more flights. What's really clear is that these members are much stickier for the hotels and airlines.
Brian Summers, addicted to mileage points.
Oh, it's really bad, John. I gotta stop.
PlusGrade are the experts in running buy miles programs. Reach out to them to get yours started or make your existing program drive even more revenue.
John, I am taking my daughter to Hawaii right after we tape today, and there's not going to be internet on the plane. I am already pretty upset about this. I think there was this mentality, you know, years ago that you could get away with not having in-flight Wi-Fi over certain oceans or on certain flights, but I just don't think that's true anymore.
And really, that's why Intelsat is rolling out its electronically steered array antenna, which gives coverage around the globe. Brett's not here to say it, so it's my job to describe Intelsat's antenna, that teeny tiny little antenna, which is 3 inches tall and connects to satellites both in geosynchronous and low Earth orbits.
That sounds fine, John, but I don't really care what orbit they use. I just want it to work. Because loading up this tablet, I have to tell you, it's been very stressful the last 24 hours.
The good thing is they've already done trials above the Arctic Circle. Then it's working. No one has it yet on board. But Alaska, Air Canada, American, Aerolíneas Argentinas will all have installations starting later this year.
Staying connected anytime, anywhere is more important than ever. Intelsat leads the way with a multi-orbit network and industry-leading antenna technology that delivers nonstop in-flight connectivity everywhere airlines fly.
Okay, so here's the quote from Harned. Doug Harned, who is an aerospace analyst at Bernstein, said of India, quote, "We see the closest parallel is Indonesia, which suggests that as a per capita income as in India grows, the amount of demand for air travel in 2028 could more than quadruple. But this will not happen, given the practical constraints of infrastructure and OEM delivery rates. But infrastructure projects underway should allow capacity to roughly double from 2018 levels."
It's still a lot.
It's a lot. But it's, again, not going to be looked at through the same lens as how we think about the growth of China. Harned goes on to say that given that major airports in the country are expected to double their capacity between 2018 and 2028 and will not be equipped to handle a 4x increase in fleet size. So you can't double the number of airport capacity, which is already pretty close to being full today, with four times the number of airplanes. The math doesn't work. Harned says, therefore, we anticipate the fleet size to grow to about 1,360 airplanes by 2028, which is double the fleet size of 680 airplanes in 2018.
Did you see this slide that in the domestic market, India has 0.13 seats per capita?
Yes, I have seen that slide. And it's fascinating because I don't recall off the top of my head what the U.S. number is, but
it is 3.09.
Well, thank you. There we go. I'm glad you had that at your fingertips. That was amazing. So, I mean, that's the amount of growth ahead for India. That's the aspiration. There's also a big question here, right, in terms of the environmental sustainability of adding this much growth to the world air system. And that's the broader question. And I think there's a very fair argument from places like India and Southeast Asia and Africa and other places that are, they're less developed comparatively to the West, to say, well, why can't we grow? You guys got to grow. Western Europe and North America, you guys got to grow with no regard for your environmental footprint. So why can't we? So one of the big pieces of this, I think this is really, really fascinating, relates to ATR. And ATR looks at India as its largest overall market. And IndiGo is a big ATR 72 turboprop operator. And ATR as a company, 50% venture between Leonardo and Airbus, ATR right now is defining what they want their next generation aircraft to look like. It's going to be an ATR 72 evolution. We don't know precisely what the technology is, but in a conversation with Alexis Vidal at the Singapore Air Show back in February, he said they're really spending this year running their feasibility study around how you hybridize a turboprop like the ATR 72. And one of the really, really interesting considerations that they have to think about when you add a hybrid technology, because hybrid means a lot of different things. And they're looking at about a 20% reduction in overall fuel consumption. So a combination of sustainable aviation fuel and some hybrid electric technology. And hybrid electric, like I said, can take on a lot of different forms. Is it batteries? Is it sharing energy back and forth to electric motors to augment? It covers a lot of varying options. That said, if you need to plug in your airplane to an electric power source, that might not be available given where ATRs fly. They spend a lot of time going from island hopping in archipelagos, mountainous regions, underdeveloped areas, because, right, the goal in a place like India is to reach underserved smaller communities. I mean, smaller communities may be cities of 10 million, right? I mean, the infrastructure and the ecosystem around electrification isn't maybe not there yet. So they have to walk this really interesting fine line as they think about developing this next generation turboprop for the Indian market in mind, but also the considerations that come along with infrastructure and the self-sustainability, right? The ability to not require airport infrastructure to operate in and out of these airports.
That was fascinating, John. I got to tell you, I'm one of these aviation geeks that, you know, always likes the bigger and better airplanes. And so I see a fleet plan for an airline like Indigo and I say, well, how many 321s, how many 320s? And, oh, it looks like they have some ATRs as well. But these are really important airplanes, right?
Oh, they're hugely important. I mean, these are market openers, right? The Indian market is fascinating, particularly because you introduce an ATR on a route, and it's a market cultivator. And the question is, when the market gets bigger and the demand grows, do you add a second turboprop, or do you just add a single aisle airplane? You know, are you graduating to a Boeing or an Airbus? And so there's almost a planned phase out that comes along with that. So it gets redeployed somewhere else in the market. But that also limits the size of the market for that particular airplane. Because again, as you're cultivating a new destination on a route map, that growth ultimately leads to connection to the larger network with a bigger airplane. And it really does keep the size of the market for the airplane considerably smaller versus a single aisle airplane, which is, again, meant to fly 150, 60, 70, 80 people from a destination to a hub or to another equivalently sized city. So it's fascinating dynamics here. So Brian, all this talk of Indigo, obviously they are the largest carrier in India. What about Air India themselves? I mean, they're in a phase of enormous flux and has historically been a bit of a basket case for the Indian market. And where do they go from here?
Yeah, John, journalism is funny in that way. I had my one-on-one meeting with Peter Elbers, and I left there thinking to myself, this airline is amazing. There's so much opportunity. How do I invest? Can I go work for you? I'm being facetious. I don't actually want to do those things. But, you know, I bought what he was selling, and then I went in there for Campbell Wilson at Air India, and I thought to myself, yikes, this is quite a turnaround that you're trying to do, and I'm not sure it's possible. I mean, I wish him well, right? We're aviation romantics. Like, why wouldn't you want to see an airline like India get back to its heyday of the 60s and 70s? But that was a really long time ago. And so he's trying to resurrect this brand that has not been in good shape for what, 30, 40 years? And, you know, he's already maybe 20 months into this turnaround. And if you ask the average traveler what he's done, they might say, well, the safety video was kind of fun now. But it goes back to this experience that I was to have on the junket to Delhi. You know, they wanted me to fly not a new Air India plane, but they wanted me to fly a 777-200LR that used to belong to Delta that still has the Delta seats. That is their premier long-haul product to the United States right now. And it just struck me that maybe not all airlines are meant to be saved. I mean, it's a populist market. It's a growing economy. We want the airline to be in good shape. Maybe there's something to the brand, but I don't know. I mean, he told this couple interesting anecdotes to me. You know, one of them is that when he got there, Air India hadn't recruited somebody for a management job in like 15 years. Another one, he was telling me that Tata bought the airline, but they didn't buy the ancillary businesses. So the MRO, the maintenance facility, is still government owned. And so you have this weird juxtaposition of you're trying to convince everybody at the airline that they now need a for-profit, you know, go type of thinking. But then when an airplane goes into maintenance, you still have the old way of thinking. You know, all these things are surmountable. But I just don't know that he can do it. What do you think?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there are a lot of legacy structures at Air India that are currently being dismantled and put back together. And how they work with that ecosystem of players fundamentally is going to decide how successful they are. I mean, that is the most blanket, obvious statement that I can make, principally because when you look at what Emirates did in Dubai, it is a true vertical strategy. I mean, everything from catering to gate ops to maintenance, everything is within the Emirates family and owned as a strategic asset of the Emirate of Dubai. And the same goes for Qatar as well. I think it's one of those things that the government has already shown that they are too important to fail, certainly, and which is why they embraced Tata coming in and the massive influx of new capital and an investment.
As if things are not complicated enough at Air India right now, they have to absorb Vistara, which is a well-run airline, but as we speak here, they're having quite a bit of drama with their pilots, who seem to be partially walking off the job in some sort of a pay dispute. It just keeps getting more complicated and more difficult.
Indian airlines in the market, and again, we're coming at it from a North American perspective, and I think that's really important. I mean, I think that we're sitting on here on the U.S. West Coast having this conversation. I think there are dynamics at play that we're kind of the outside looking in on, but I think that one of the clear things that there absolutely is the ambition to grow big and to do it in a way that ideally is sustainable.
You've been listening to The Air Show. Thank you for joining us. And remember, if you have suggestions or questions for us, or you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, go to our website, theairshowpodcast.com, to get in touch. The Air Show podcast is produced and edited by Sarah Fay. Our theme music is by Joshua Mosier. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.